Welcome to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. This is the place to be for stories to inspire and uplift when life doesn't go according to our plans. I'm Laura Muirhead, your host and the reigning queen of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. I can't wait to share the plot twist stories of my guests that will inspire and uplift you when life didn't follow the plan, right here on A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast. Hello, and welcome to this episode of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. I'm your host, Laura Muirhead, and I am so happy to welcome my guest today, Claudia Williams, all the way from Sydney, Australia. So Claudia, come and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do in the world.
Hi, I'm Claudia Williams. Thank you so much for having me. So I am a transformational guide helping awakened women embody their feminine essence so that they can live in alignment and attract things that are in aligned to their path. So do you want a little bit of my background?
Yeah, I mean, you weren't always a transformational coach. You didn't start. This isn't where you started. So tell us a little bit about like your background and where you came from and how you came to be where you are.
Yes, so I come from South Africa. I'm a South African. Come from a really traumatic childhood. I had an absent mom and dad. My dad was, I think, narcissist/psychopath. Didn't really have him present in my life. Come from poverty. I used to steal my food a lot. And I just didn't understand, you know, why my parents used to fight so much, why we didn't have money. I thought, well, is this a cosmic joke? I didn't come for this. So it's like my inner being was like, what, you know, is this it? I came for more. So I was really confused with God. And I always had that relationship with him, even though I did not conceptualize what I felt, but I knew that there was a higher power and that, you know, life was more than what I saw with the physical eye. So I went to school, I was qualified to become a lawyer at the age of 17, because I finished school. But my dad actually passed away at the age of when I was 16 years old. And I just felt this inner kind of call to leave my country. When he died a year later, because I thought, well, I'm free now. My dad was a really dominant man. He didn't want me to explore, go out. So I'm like, well, this is the opportunity. And then before I made that decision to leave at the age of 17, I overheard my mom speak to her friend. And she used to travel a lot. And she used to speak about Israel. And I'm like, wow, I want to go check that out. And then I told my mom, 5 months before I actually decided not to go to law school, I said, can you please buy me a ticket abroad and give me some money? So I always had this fierceness in me. I had this, I'm not afraid. I will conquer anything. And she said, sure, I'll give you $50 and ticket. You're going to have to work for it. So we, you know, had a bash party, a pool party, and we tried to make money, today's funds for me to leave. And then I left just with the address, a little address, flew to Israel. Once the plane hit off, I was like, well, where are we going? I have no idea. This is kind of like a shock. So everything was kind of hitting me, right? But you know what? There's a God. If there's a will, there's a way. I just, I just trusted what I felt in my heart. I still have that feeling today that there's a God and I'm protected and guided and I've got to do what God says. And even though I didn't conceptualize go left, go right, I just kind of went with where my body took me. Didn't know anyone when I got to Israel. I don't know how I did find work on a moshav. Moshav is where you pick melons, cucumbers. You wake up at 4, but because we got a paycheck, we had to work from 4 o'clock to 11. So it was pretty scary. I was pretty scared, but at the same time excited. I was scared, but I still had this like peace in my heart, like it's going to be fine. So it was quite hard the first 2 months, and 6 months later, I became the head pick and packer of that company because it was so hot, like 45 degrees, and we had to work in like these plastic little tunnels. And I'm like, I've got to work faster because it's just too hot. It's either this or leave. And I wasn't ready to leave. And at that time, my mom didn't have much money because my dad died in a car crash. And she didn't cover my mom. So I had to work to send her money home at the age of 17. So that's how my life started. I just had to kind of be in flight and fight response, always in the masculine energy. How am I going to make money? Am I going to survive? What's my next step? I don't know what's happening, but I know that South Africa is not really for me. And things just kind of progressed. And then I from Israel, and then I flew to England, and then I worked there as well and just explored. And then I met my soulmate after a couple of like months, just traveling up and down, trying to find my own way. But there was always just this peace. I'm okay. Everything's going to be okay. And I'll try to do my best and everything that I can. And that's how I am here today. Being a transformational guide, helping women to step into their feminine essence so that they can live in alignment, because I was in such a masculine energy, operating from lack, scarcity, to shame, and isolation. So even though I was like, things was always falling into place, I was driven by fear, even though I had that inner peace, but I was driven by my upbringing, my programming, and always in this masculine energy to survive. Mm-hmm. And then I got married to my soulmate. And then we had 6 children. I lost two kids, and then I was still in that energy. And then like 5 years ago, I had chronic fatigue where I was bed bound for 6 months. Because of the programming, like I've just got to keep going. So I was like on this wheel, on this hamster wheel, you know, I was striving to struggle. That was my whole story. I've got to strive to struggle. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, when we are.
Okay, I've got questions. Wait, I've got questions already.
Okay.
Once you got to Israel, I mean, you literally showed up with $50 in your pocket. Yes. And that was it.
Yes. And $50.
How did you find a place to live? What did you like? You had obviously had this, like, I want to say like a fire inside you, a passion inside you, but how did you find a place to live? How did you even know where to go and where to start? And, you know, how did you find a way to guide yourself to even find a place to live and get a job?
Wow. So yeah, they spoke Hebrew. I didn't speak any English. When I overheard my mother speak to a friend, she kept saying Mushav, Mushav, Mushav. And I'm like, how does she make money? So I did ask my mom a little bit questions. And a Mushav in a Yav is where you pick fruit, da 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 da. So that's all I had in my mind. I remember when I got into Israel, it was dark. There was a bus. So basically, I just kept asking Mushav, where is Mushav? For me, it was like a little game. Because I came from such a dysfunctional childhood, I was so fearless. It's like, it's either this or I'm going to die. It's either because that's how I grew up. Because my dad used to beat my mother up. You know, he was an alcoholic. I'm like, man, this is what? So I had that in my head. It's either this or I'm going to die because that's all I know. But, you know, because it's a God, there's a way. And because I went with the beginner's mind, I came from a place of purity. You know, even though I had this fear, I was very innocent. So nothing's going to happen to me because I'm protected. And then I asked it out. I'm like, I'm looking for Mishav. And they'll point me in different directions. Bus, they'll say the word bus. And then I just have to kind of go with that. You know, I'll maybe sit on in the park stool kind of figuring out. And I'll just ask questions. It's like, I don't know. But I trusted, even though I didn't know, I trusted. I'm like, things will work out for me. I always had that knowing, inner childlike knowing, things will work out. And then I just trusted what people told me. They'll say bus number, you know, and then I had to figure out what this guy meant. And then I'll get on a bus and then they'll take me to the Mushav. And then I just had to find my way. And it was just the desert. You know, so you have a little bit of shops and it's just desert for like miles. That's all you see. It's just like white sand.
What an amazing story. So it sounds to me like you, you know, like you keep saying that you trusted and you knew things were going to work out. Like you had like an inner compass almost that you just followed your inner compass.
Yes, yes. And because that's all I had ever had as a child, I'm getting quite emotional now. It wasn't really blurry. You know, when we become adults, we have a family, things get kind of blurry. It's like, I don't know, it's just left, is it right? So that was really strong for me. I just felt it in my body. So I went with it, you know, like I just went with this compass took me. Yeah, because when amazing. You have that childlike purity and innocence, even though I had trauma that clouded my perception a little bit, I just went with the body's compass, which I think as women now, you know, in a masculine dominated world, we kind of lose sight of that clarity. We kind of have to build ourselves up. And things just fell into place. You know, I asked around, knocked on some doors. I will say, luckily, my farmer spoke a little bit of English. So this bus, I got on the bus. It took me to the Mishav. I had to kind of find my way through there. And the Mishav is like a farm. So you have a lot of houses, just houses. There's no farms. You've actually got to drive like 15 kilometers to get into the farm through the desert. And I'll just knock on doors. And I said, I'm looking for work. Do you have any work for me? A couple of times. And then this one guy opened the door and I said, are you looking for any workers? I'm here to work. And the guy said, how did you get here? What can you do? Do you have a room? And they gave me a room. And they said, okay, tomorrow we start at 4 o'clock. These are your clothes. I need you in the shed at 4 p.m. I had no fear. I'm like, okay. I was the only woman with 6 men. Yeah, so things kind of progressed. And then you kind of start doing the work. And you're like, oh, my God, I better pull up my socks here. It's either this or go back home. And I need the money. And I don't want to go back home because what's there? There's nothing. You know, it's either this or go to university. And I wasn't ready for that because I was so confused about life and of all the trauma I've experienced. I'm like, I'm not ready to kind of process that phase. And then after 3 months, I became one of the biggest and highest paid earners there because I had to work at a good speed. So we had to pick melons in this plastic little tunnels. And I had to work really fast because, like I said, it was like 45 degrees. And we all wore this because it was so hot, this balaclava. So you just see the eyes. Our eyes, and we had to cover our whole bodies. And after 2 months, I started getting like eczema, itching because it was so hot. My hands used to bleed because it used to split open because of the gloves. But I persevered. I kind of sucked it up, you know? Yeah. And then after 6 months, I think I made about $25,000, sent my mother money to pay the mortgage and food. And then I used what I had and I flew to England. And then when I got to England, I kind of the same thing. Where am I going to go? How am I going to get a job? I need money. And then you just ask questions and then you just go, started working, saved a lot of money, saved. And then I flew to Ireland to work there again. And then I met my husband. And then, yeah, that's where things just progressed.
What spurred you to want to go to England? You know, did you just follow your intuition? Was there a reason you thought England would be the place to go?
Well, where I worked on the Mushav, there was a lot of other people from Czechoslovakia and Australia. They were working on a kibbutz. I was a Mushav. Kibbutz is where you just kind of hang around, pick a little bit, and they give you pocket money. And there was a lot of travelers, and they said, oh, if you go to England and work in London, you can make more money and you can make pounds. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to England because I can make some money. So I had to get a visa first. Luckily, I had money to pay for it. And then I bought myself a plane ticket and I took notes again on what I heard. I took down numbers, information, took that information to England, and I used to use the payphone and kind of guide myself. So I was now 18 and a half. Right, 18 and a half. And I just took that information. So I used to listen. I was a good listener. And I used to take a lot of notes mentally. Because when you became very street smart, because I had that flight and fight response, very active, that kept me alive. And that helped me to be street smart because I'm trying to protect myself. So my radar was also on. So that really served me at that time. But when you get to an age of like, you know, when you live in the modern day world and you don't really want to have that fight and flight, you don't want to be in, your nervous system is very hyper aroused and hypersensitive. So that's where you've got to make the switch, right? Yes.
Okay, so
doors always opened for me. Things always just fell into place. I'm like, wow, I know nothing, but it's always money and work. I'll always get accommodation. And, you know, obviously when I got to this age with kids, I'm like, why is my life not working? Because I was trying to, you know, we tried to conceptualize everything. How am I going to make money? Life gets in the way and all that. That radar gets very clouded. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you ended up meeting your soulmate. How did you meet him?
Yes. Yeah, so I was working on farms again. So when I was working in Israel, they said, look, you can make more money if you're a good worker, fast worker, you go to England. This is the name of the company. This is one of the things that I heard. So I did some other jobs. I was also a stripper. I made a lot of money there. And then I went to this company called Manstaff. So Manstaff is like a company that they kind of subcontract other companies, farmers, to pick and pack for them. And I kind of met my husband doing that.
That's amazing. Yeah. So it just, yeah, everything again just worked out for you so that you met him.
Yeah, doors opened, things happened. I just had this constant peace. It's like, it's going to work out. I'm just kind of the vehicle. Yeah. I didn't know it at that time. I'm like, just, this is where God wants me. So I'm just going to listen to it. So stupid, you know, like so blonde. I was such a blondie.
That's so funny. But also, I feel like, you know, when you're talking about like even, for example, like the law of attraction or whatever, there's a level of like, clearly you had like a passion and you had a goal. I want to make money. I need to work. I need to, you know, I need to survive, but also you took action and took inspired action. It sounds like you said, yes. Like things just worked out. You paid attention and doors opened for you.
Yes.
And
it's like, yes,
you were attracting it to you somehow.
Yes. And at the age of 19, then my husband said, let's go to London. And then we were starting to mingle with people. And then another opportunity arise. He said, you want to manage my company cleaning? We made $250,000 in that year cleaning we worked for Madonna. We worked for all these celebrities. We had people work under us. And even though, you know, we used to step into these celebrity homes, I was like, oh, okay, this is just another job. So do you know what I mean? It didn't really go to my head. It was just kind of natural. And I was very in tune at that time. So yes, law of attraction. And also I did have a certain level of self-belief. I was so stubborn because my dad used to beat my mom up so much that I don't know, there was just something about me, this fire. It's like, no one's going to bring me down. I'm going to make it here. I'm bulletproof. You know, and yeah, I think that really helps when you have that. I think, and also because I operated in a state of trust and love, there was this purity of mind that I had love in my heart, the love of God. Because as a small child, I used to pray. I used to use my mom's grandma's rosary. I used to pray at night and I used to say, thank you, God. Thank you for all that I have. Please be with me. You know, I want you to love me, because I didn't have that love. So I used to go to God and I said, I want you to love me. Thank you for loving me. You know, so I had that in my heart. And I think that really helps as well, because if you operate from fear, it's like nothing's going to work out, right?
Yeah. And I feel like you have so many lessons here in your story, because not that you would ever hope for, you know, to have the life you had as a child, but it taught you so many things and it gave you so much strength. But it also then here you are able to show gratitude, which is such a high vibration and attracts so many good things in, and like love and gratitude, but also this strength that you were able to have and to not, again, not want the life that your mom had and to not live, but also like you said, to not have fear. You'd already lived through all the fear. Like there's nothing to be afraid of, because you already knew, you know, that like you'd already seen terrible things.
Yes. So I think in a way, you know, we come with soul contracts. So when we come here, it's like we signed up for this. Whatever's happening, you signed up for it. So I kind of had to suck it up. Like my mom used to have broken ribs, broken nose. My dad was just a lunatic. So I had this like, you know, it can only get better than that. And I kind of made a promise to myself, I am not going to struggle one day. Because at the age of 12, I used to go to the shops to steal food. I used to go steal food. I used to steal my clothes, because whenever I used to go to my mom, it's like, can I have this? We don't have money. I'm like, so what am I supposed to wear? Just wear your clothes. And all my friends were looking nice. And I'm like, no way. And I used to get confused. It's like, well, if I'm a child of God, what the hell is this? It used to confuse me. Why are we so poor? Is this a joke? Do you know what I mean? So I think I made that promise to myself. I am not going to live like this. Nor am I going to have a husband beater. And it's funny, right? You come from what you know. So my husband, well, we are separated now. Good separate. My husband was totally opposite. So kind, so loving, so generous. So even then I manifested him, because at the age of 12, I said, I'm never going to marry a man like my dad, or I'm never going to get married. I'm always going to take my life, control my life. And I used to be upset with my mother, because she was just like, I'm like, why don't you leave this man? He's beating you. Oh, this is just how it is. So I was such a confused child. You know, it's like, why is everyone uptight? Why do we struggle? Why are we living here? So I asked a lot of questions, you know, and I used to kind of talk to God at night. It's like, I don't get this. I didn't sign up for this. And that drives you because you want that answer. You want to defy the odds because you know inherently we know that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. So we try to search for that experience to justify our past. Does that make sense? Because yeah, there's a contrast. Yeah, it's like, this is the contrast. Well, I don't want this. I want more.
Yeah, definitely showed you like what you didn't want. And so you were driven to bring into your life, to make a life that you did want. I love that.
Yes, exactly. And it's progress. And, you know, we have to kind of sit with the consequences of the choices that we make. I mean, even with the dynamic, I know this might be, you know, not be part of the interview, but even with, I've been married for 25 years, 6 children to the same man. But as you ascend and grow, your beliefs start refining and refining and refining. And if that paradigm is not in congruency to your partner, you've got to make a decision. Am I going to stay with this paradigm? Is love enough for me? Or am I going to keep choosing myself? And this is the thing, when you choose the life that you want, because you've had that contrast, you've still got to make those difficult decisions, even in your adulthood. So it's a progression, right, into the stairways of heaven. You know, I'm not a Christian, but I still love the Bible because I wanted to be like Jesus. I wanted to make God proud. And Jesus used to say, come up higher, you know, and there's always another phase to that exploration, and you've always got to make the difficult decisions. I made so many difficult decisions as a child. For me, it wasn't a difficult decision for me. It's like, I just want to survive. How can I survive? But as an adult, because I'm safe, you still got to ask, is this good enough for me? Is this good enough for me? Because I know there's a God and I know that He has more for me. So you still have to make those decisions.
Yeah, we don't stop. We don't stop. Life doesn't stop. We still continue to evolve. And everything still continues to what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next choice? So how did you end up in Australia?
So my husband is actually English-Australian. And we lived in England for a couple of years. And I'm like, man, why is it always so dark and dead here? And I just thought, I can't stand this weather. And then he said, do you want to immigrate to Australia? You know, it's good for the kids. There's a lot of beaches. It's nice and hot. You'll enjoy it. The houses are big. And then we immigrated to Australia. So my decision of leaving my country at 15 because I wanted more, that's actually opened the pathway to sponsor my family, my mom, my 2 sisters to leave Africa to come over to Australia and England. So I feel like I was the chosen one. You know, I think God chooses people to kind of break generational curses. But my point being, yes, because I listened to that call, it's opened other doors and blessed my life, not only for me, but my mother. She's built a beautiful house on the beach. My sister's living in London. She's thriving. My other sister got married. So, you know, I'm grateful for that opportunity of how I've changed their lives because of my decision of saying yes to God.
I love this. I've talked about this on some of my previous episodes with some of my guests as well, but I feel like there's always this ripple effect, right? There's this ripple effect of what we do or our choices or, you know, our energy. And this to me is the perfect example of that. Like you chose to, like you said, to leave your country, to make these and you became successful. And then because of that, you're sharing it and helping the rest of your family. And I think it's so amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's incredible. So now, at what point did you switch to being a, you know, to helping other women, helping people in their own transformations? How long have you been doing that work, this kind of work?
So I've been on this self-discovery journey for, I think, most of my life. I've always been a seeker of truth. I've always gone to God and said, why is this happening? I don't understand it. And then I'll get shown the answer. So I feel like I've always had this curiosity, this childlike curiosity and wonder. So when I got married to my husband, we had children. We lost our second child, then I had bipolar. So I lost my second child, but I suppressed all that depression and the grief and whatever came with that loss of the child. And then I got the bipolar. Now, because even though I had this flow state doors opening, I suppressed a lot of my trauma as a child. Like, I didn't feel the love. I didn't feel a sense of belonging. My dad used to bash my mother up. I used to get hit. I used to get hidings a lot. My mom was emotional absent mother, so I had a big mother wound. I never had that love, validation, a sense of belonging. So I had all these patterns, like all this trauma, suppressed trauma. And for me, it was like, this is just how it is. This is just how it is. So when I got my second child, lost him, then I got that, I think that activated so-called bipolar. Then again, the cycle happened. I mean, I was given loads of tablets. My husband took 3 years of work to look at me because I was just so sick. And then I went to God again. I'm like, now why am I having this? I don't understand it. And I used to get a lot of medications. I used to be like a living corpse. I was just like, oh, couldn't function properly. They used to medicate me so much. And so I had the best psychologist. My husband is a wonderful man. Even though we're separated now, I still have high regard. I still hold him in high regard. Nothing's personal. This is how it is. And he paid for the best psychologist, psychiatrist. I'm like, this people's not even helping. And then I got upset with God. I'm like, what is this? And why did you choose me? Like, I'm the chosen one. Do you know what I mean? I had this, like, this kind of narcissistic, I'm the chosen one. I'm not supposed to go through this. And that kind of helped me to get that fire back of, like, this is not going to be my life. I'm not going to be a vegetable. I didn't sign up for this. And I know that I'm here for more. So I had that come out again. So after 2 years, I started praying. I'm like, I've got to strengthen my faith, because when you have bipolar, you lose your sense of identity, you lose your clarity, you just become like a victim, right? You don't have that fight in you, you kind of give up. And I'm like, I'm not going to give up. I mean, that's the show is not over. And then I started praying and I said, God, I need your help. I need you to help me. But because I had the evidence of what he's done in my life previously, I had that confidence that he will help me, because the doctors are not helping me. Basically, all they do is medicate me. And then I started praying, reading the Bible again to kind of recover my identity in Christ, even though I'm not Christian, but Jesus had this powerful presence and identity. I'm like, if I can get a little bit of that, I can kind of make my choices again. And then that faith came back and that clarity of my guidance came back, because I started hearing it again. And then one day when I pick up my medication, I heard, this will be your last time that you will get these meds. And that's when I thought, okay, things are starting to happen. And once I finished my meds, I had to kind of purify myself from that medication. And I didn't tell any doctors, because it's very dangerous to just go off those meds, because it balances out the brain neurotransmitters. It balances that out, so it does a lot to the chemicals in the brain to keep one stabilized, because when you have bipolar, you can have all these like highs and lows. And you know, I spent $20,000 of my husband's money. I used to like get tickets before for speeding, so you do all these weird things. But I trusted. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to tell the doctor because he's going to think I'm crazy. So I had to keep everything in me. And then what I did when I used to feel, so basically the prayer and the fasting helped me to stabilize myself, drop into my body, And it helped me to sit with whatever flashbacks or emotions of pain and fear that's come up from my childhood. And I had to sit with it and dissolve it. And I had to learn how to regulate myself. That time I didn't know, but I was trying to learn how to emotionally regulate my nervous system so that I can stay balanced and not hyper. So that took a lot of mindfulness and mind training. You know, now that, you know, spiritual teachers call it mind training, but I did it unconsciously. And that's when I began to stabilize myself. After 6 months, I could feel, okay, I'm feeling good. Things are starting to balance out. And that's when my search began, like, wow, I want to, oh, and then I started to become a therapist because I had therapists and I thought, well, they study for 5 years for what? Nothing. All they ask is like, how are you? What are you doing? And how are you feeling? I thought, I want to be better than that. I want to help people. And that therapy work that I did progressed into transformational guides because I could see the woman that I sat with, that they were highly medicated on all these anxiety tablets. But I knew, no, this is just trauma that's hidden. So this is creating the paradigm of like something wrong with me. But when you're working in that dynamics, you've got a certain criteria that you've got to stand by and you can't tell them these things. So my gifts began to open up. So I began to sense and see things. And I'm like, well, I'll get away from this, step out of therapy and start my own business.
I love this. I think that, and tell me if you agree, but I feel like at some point, whatever the trauma we have experienced in life, we do have to somehow face it, whether it's forced, like it almost was, yes, forced to you that it came out and you had this stuff going on. And I have heard a lot of people with stories, not exactly like yours, but of, you know, like having realizations, like having big medical issues and just being like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. Like with you, like, I'm not going to take these meds anymore. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And they do realize like, and not that it's easy on any level, but they do realize like, okay, let me go into myself. Let me, you know, rely on God or spirit or my angels or whatever to help me. And they end up healing. And from that, of course, your experience is so strong that you're able to help other people and it's inspiring. And people are like, well, if she could do it, then I can do it. And how did you do it? Show me. And, you know, tell me what you think of all that. I said a lot, but what do you think?
Oh, definitely. I think trauma can become a pathway into enlightenment. It's, you know, yeah, there's a lot of people that are suffering. We all have trauma, and I feel for these people. But that is not your paradigm. It's just a pathway into becoming enlightened. I mean, I'm not an enlightened being, and I most probably won't be in this lifetime because there's just so much to learn. But that is the gift of the history of trauma. It's like, what is this teaching me? How can I become better? Who am I? What is my purpose? How can I live on purpose? Right. So that is the invitation when you come from a very traumatic childhood, and we all come from dysfunctional homes. So there's an opportunity in these, in suffering, right? Because life overall is so-called suffering. That can be a paradigm, but right now it's not mine because obviously I've flipped paradigms. I've ascended into a higher state of consciousness. But at that time, I used trauma as how can I become better? How can I integrate these gifts and activate my talents?
Well, and again, I think this, again, it kind of goes back to what I said before, where these things are all lessons for us. Exactly. And, you know, it makes you stronger. What you experienced as a child made you stronger and gave you the strength to go out on your own. And this is actually why I call my podcast A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life, because we frequently, there's times when we think we're on a path like, oh, this is where my life's going. And then something goes sideways and you either deal with that or you don't. Like if you, yes, hadn't dealt with it, you would potentially still be on this roller coaster with, you know, drugs and not, and like you said, being a zombie or whatever. So at some point, like, you took the strength and said, no, enough. I've got it. Again, like what you said, I choose me. And what is that going to look like now?
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, as we progress, because like you said, that we're constantly evolving, you get to a point where like, man, this whole system is a lie. My whole life is a lie. And then you've got to kind of reevaluate things, right? So there's so much mystery in life to be had that it kind of becomes an adventure as well. You know, when we live in the question of what is and or what is reality. So it just kind of gets better and better after a while. Once you've kind of gone through the initiation of that trauma and using trauma as a pathway into the kind of reality of things.
I love that you said that it's an adventure, because if you can either look at it that way, you know, again, like, that's why I said a funny thing happened on the way to my life. Yes. If you don't look at it as an adventure, you potentially are staying in the victim mentality of this is happening to me and, oh, poor me. And, oh, even like the attitude of, oh my goodness, like what else is going to go wrong, or what else, what next, what next, what next. But instead, you know, in like in your experience, in your situation and your life adventure, you did choose to be like, no, I'm not going to sit in this and be like this poor little me. What next? I'm going to take control. I'm going to take the reins and be like, yeah, what's next in a good way? What can I choose next? And what's the next adventure? And how can I use this to become stronger? And I love that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
I think that's incredible. And again, I feel like so many people, I have no doubt that your experiences just really help the people that you work with. And this is, to me, a lot of times so much more valuable than going to the, to, you know, get a college degree or going to the university or getting a certificate. You know, if people say, well, what do you have? I have incredible life experience that I can share with you. And real time, like real time, I did this and I succeeded and I'm here. And to me, that's so much more, you know, so there's so much value there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you come from that kind of mind frame, what it gives you with as well, it's emotional intelligence. You have empathy, you have compassion for self, because you've taken yourself through such a journey that you have that understanding. Because I brought myself here, how can I love myself more? You know, we have kindness towards others. There's a kind of understanding when you meet people, you know, and this creates the human experience, that connection and that intimacy, which is lacking in today's society, because we are driven by making money. We are driven to make more money, especially now that the so-called interest rates have come up. People are forgetting the true meaning of what it is, what it means to live on purpose. And purpose doesn't have to be a grandiose, oh, I've got to find my purpose. Purpose is like, how can I be authentic myself? How can I be authentically me? How can I bestow more of this kindness? How can I have more compassion for self and others? How can I be of service to God and to myself and in service of my soul that keeps expanding? Right? So we lose touch of these beautiful qualities that makes the human experience beautiful and loving and makes the world a better place. And we forget about living on purpose for the betterment of our planet. So we lose sight of what is truly important. So I think suffering and trauma should be an integral part of this human existence. And people should just see that this is just part of it. There's nothing wrong with it, but this is an initiation to my pathway of enlightenment. And this is why I'm here. And okay, be a victim for like 2 or 3 days, but like Jesus rose from the cross, and as he did now, it's like, get off your butt, sit for 3 days and do the work.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? And find the lesson in it or move through it. Like, yeah, don't ignore it, feel it and explore it and see where can you go forward from that.
Exactly, because life is short. We don't have much time. That's me even. And I don't know. I know this is not part of the podcast. But with my separation, it's a conscious separation. So we're still consciously with our kids, whatever. But for me, it's like I went to my husband. It's like, what is the plan? I've got 45 years left on this planet. What are we going to do? Oh, this is my plan. And I'm like, well, that's not what I want. So the decision here, it's like, am I going to stay with this man that I love so much? Or am I going to choose myself and trust God that he's going to open up doorways? Because life is short. And when I'm 85, I'm like, man, I played a good game. God, I played a good game for 80 years. I did not give up because we were bestowed with that abundant knowing that there's more and there's going to be more experiences, opportunities. And do you know what I'm saying? So I think we've got to have that fierceness and fight for life. We are kind of warriors here. Otherwise, the world is just going to engulf us with fear and it's not enough. And the interest rates has gone down and we lose sight of what the hell?
Yeah. And I think it, along with what you're saying, like being separated from your husband, like you can walk the path together and evolve together. But if there comes a time when your desires are going in different directions or, you know, you're not evolving together in that way anymore, exactly. then there's, like you said, decisions to be made. And it doesn't mean that you can't still be supportive of each other and love each other and support your children. You just need to choose your own direction and make sure you're both being, the word that's coming to me is being fed, but that's, I don't know, like being fulfilled really more is, I guess, the word.
Like, let me make this clear. When I met my husband, I didn't meet him and say yes from a state of clarity, like my true self. So I chose him from a wounded state because my program was I don't belong and I'm not safe. My husband met that need. So I was basically trauma bonded with my husband. Right? And this is a beautiful man, but there comes a point in time when you think, well, this man is just not living in this paradigm. And because I always know that there's more, I want more from life. And he is not the source of my abundance. God is. God is my beloved, and he always will be. So, yeah, you got to make that difficult choices. And it's sad that things had to go this way. But for me, it's not sadness as well. This is just the progression of life, and there's nothing to be sad about. And obviously, you got to go through the grief, the pain of separation, the pain of choosing yourself again. You've got to sit with it. Right? It's a constant choosing of self
and rebuilding. You know, whatever you had together, you know now you're rebuilding your life on your own, or whatever that looks like, and it's another lesson, another twist in the road, you know, for your life. Yes. And like I said, another adventure.
Exactly. You just got to kind of walk the path and try to gather up all that resilience, because you kind of lose it on the way when you have kids. You know, life happens and you kind of lose that childlike trust and faith. So you got to build that up again and build in the, you know, the inner landscapes of inner safety and inner security. Inner security, which I believe is the initiation of all great things when one wants more in life. Without that, we cannot survive. There's a lot of women that I coach. They don't have that baseline of inner security and inner safety because we have been externalizing our sense of reference. Where there's no externalization, really. We are all just living our paradigm from what we perceive is happening in our own worlds, right? So that's another process we've got to go through. Yeah. How can I be safe? How can I be safe and secure in myself?
Well, and that's what actually my coach that I've worked with forever, you know, always talks about, you know, the five basic human needs. And one of them is safety, you know, safety and, having a home and, but safety as far as like, you know, are we being fed? Do we have warmth? I can't think of the word. Are, you know, like the old idea of a tribe, are we accepted in our tribe? These are, you know, basic human needs and safety. Like you said, there's a level of having to feel safe in whatever that is not only physical, but emotionally and mentally safe as well.
Yeah. And I think also feeling safe in yourself and who you are and making those decisions, because when you come from trauma, society's mind programmings, you don't have that like safety because people's telling you what to do. You've got to buy this. This is, you know, first they say eat that, then you can't eat gluten. It's like, what? I'm so confused. So you kind of lose that inner safety. You know, like Jesus and Buddha, they just had this sense of like groundedness. They were in their bodies. We lose that here because we're always in the mind. So in order to make wise decisions and trust your intuition so that God or your inner compass can guide you, you've got to have that internal baseline of I'm safe. I'm safe because I've got to make this decision. Now, can I make this decision from fear or can I make this decision from pure groundedness? Because we don't want to feel, right? We don't want to feel. We get scared. And if we're in that fight and flight response, we don't feel safe.
I think that's such an important point that you're making, because I think, like you said, there's so much information that comes from the outer world that makes us not feel comfortable in ourselves anymore, not feel safe in ourselves anymore, not feel confident in ourselves, not trust ourselves in our inner knowing. And I think that's a really important point that you've brought up.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I think you have just given us so many gems, and to our listeners, and just so many incredible things that you've shared today. Is there anything, like, just as we wrap up, any last thoughts, any last things you'd like to share?
No, just thank you for having me. It's nice just to think back to my history and, you know, my inner child and everything she's gone through. It gives me an opportunity to connect to that energy again.
I am so inspired by your story and by the strength that you have, and it's amazing. And your business, your website is Live With Courage. That's right. Yes. And so I love that that's, you know, you've lived with courage. And I'm going to share in the show notes, you know, all your website and your social information, but tell the audience one last time where they can find you, where they can connect with you.
Yeah, so I'm Instagram, Facebook, and the website for any information. When they go to livewithcourage.com.au, they can download the free offer, and that's how they keep in touch. I send them emails once a month. There's, I think, a newsletter. Yeah, and if they have any questions, they can always send me a message.
I love it. I love it. Well, I think this is a great place to wrap up. And I so appreciate you being a guest. I'm sure that you've inspired me. I'm sure you're inspiring the people who are listening. And thank you so much for what you do in the world and sharing your story with me and the listeners today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast. For more information, visit my website at www.lauramuirhead.com.